It's a pleasure to have Juan Strada here with us today. He's an experimentalist at Fermilab, and he'll be telling us about dark matter searches with electron counting sensors. So go ahead, Juan. Thank you again.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Thank you for inviting me for this seminar. So I will describe the program that we have to search for low mass dark matter with CCDs that count for single electrons. I know, I imagine that most of you are theorists, right? So I hope I don't bore you too much with the experimental side, but that's the part that I want to tell you the most, right? So hopefully I can make it interesting. Okay, first, maybe I don't need to spend a lot of time on this, right? But the driver for our effort here is the low mass dark matter. And again, right, at your institute, I don't need to convince you that that we think dark matter is real and we are looking for it. Now, what I wanted to point out is that in order to search for dark matter, we have been building detectors that have we have been pushing in two main frontiers for the detector technology, right? On one side, we have been looking at detectors that have a lower and lower threshold. And we have also been trying to develop larger detectors, right? And you can see that in this plot where this is an older plot, but the idea is to show that there are type of dark matter searches that really push for lower cross section in this 10 to 100 GV mass range by going to very large detectors, right? 1 ton and several tons. And then there are another type of experiments that push for really lower mass dark matter searches with technology that focuses on reducing the detector threshold, right? And when you look for low mass dark matter, as shown in these plots here, you really need to get to detector thresholds or to detectors that can detect, that can see a nuclear recoil of a few small number of kVs, 20, you know, 10 or so kVs. And that's the area where we have been working on, right? Developing these detectors for very low threshold. Initially, we're focusing on the standard WIMP searches, looking for nuclear recoils with low threshold. And then we went into electron recoils. I will try to tell you that story, right? One thing that is really impressive to me is the progress that has been done on the dark matter search for the last several years, right? Or several decades, I should say, and really how we have been experimentally being able to keep up with the progress of reducing the cross-section limits for WIMP searches, right? So this has, we have not found the dark matter, but this has been a very big success experimentally. Now, the problem is that we didn't find the WIMPs, and so we are looking to lower mass particles and lower mass models. And as I mentioned before, that really means going to pushing for lower threshold. As we can see in this plot, right, we are looking for WIMPs that go from 10 GeV to 2 GeV masses, then really the threshold in the nuclear recoil has to go below 1 KeV, right? So in this talk, I will build on this experimental program, right, for WIMPs, and go into the lower mass dark matter models from a few GeV lower, right, in this green region here. And that's where the technology that we have been developing turns out to be really, really competitive, right? So in the case of the classic WIMP, we look for nuclear recoils, as I was mentioning before. But when you are looking at the low mass particles, then the nuclear recoil is not the most efficient channel, right? So I took this slide from Ruben. It has a table for the electron, for how when you go to low masses, right, really the electron recoil is what is the most efficient way to look for that low mass dark matter particle because of the binding energy of around 1 eV, right? So even the cross section is smaller, it's really the signal that you can see when the dark matter particle becomes very light. And again, right, the typical energies that you can see in this case goes from KV to something on the order of EVs. Okay, so now let's think about the experimental tools for this, right? So the first thing is to tell you a little bit about a CCD and how the CCD works as a dark matter detector. So when we are looking for WIMPs with the CCD, we essentially have a large mass, well, I should say it's large mass for a silicon detector, right? But it's a silicon sensor with a few grams of active mass that what you can measure the ionization produced by particles interacting with the silicon. In the case of a WIMP, you have a coherent scattering with the silicon nucleus that produces ionization. The ionization is collected on the pixels of our CCD, and that's the signal that we measure, right? In the last maybe 10 or 15 years, there has been a development out of the MSL group at LBNL on producing very thick silicon CCDs. And that is actually what allows to use these detectors as dark matter search, right? Until, 15 years ago, the scientific CCDs were only 10 microns thick. And that doesn't give you any mass for a dark matter search. So our colleagues at LBNL developed CCDs that can be up to 675 microns in thickness, and this is because they came up with a very smart way of fully depleting these detectors, and those are what we are going to use for our dark matter cell. I see that someone raised a hand, so if you want to ask your question, go ahead, please.
I want to know what is a CCD means.
Is a charge coupled device, right? A CCD is an imager very similar to the imagers in commercial cameras. In this case, the couple of advantages that we have over commercial CCDs is that they are very thick, right? These 675 microns, and that they have very low readout noise, getting to about 2 electrons.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Sorry, Juan, can I stop you for a second? So why is it easier to deplete 10 micrometer CCD than 600 micrometer CCD? I mean, you just put an electric field and the charges will go away. Why was it hard?
So the first thing is that you need to increase the resistivity of the silicon in order to be able to fully deplete a thick piece of silicon with a reasonable voltage, right? If you put a high enough voltage, you can deplete anything, but we want to have this working as a CCD, so you cannot put, 100 volts or so. So we need to build a detector that can be fully depleted with low voltage, and that is what we get with a high resistivity silicon. And the other development that our colleagues from Berkeley had was, you see in this picture, I quote the bias voltage for depleting the detector being connected to the backside of the silicon, right? And that's not really what is done. So they develop a structure on the edge of the detectors that brings the field lines all the way to the back. And that's the way, by connecting only one side of the detector, you can fully deplete it. Okay, so it was both a material development on very high resistivity silicon and a smart way of connecting this bias voltage on the back, right? Those were developed for astronomy, right? So I work on the dark energy survey, and we were developing these detectors for near infrared imaging with the dark energy survey. We want thick detectors to be able to look at near infrared objects in the sky. So in 2014, we just took some of those detectors and installed them in Canada at Snow Lab, right, to perform the first experiments with dark matter searches with CCDs. We extended that program, after the first initial results from the engineering detectors. Yes, I see you have a question. Go ahead.
I want to ask about what is the real problem of the in measuring the dark matter. What is the problem itself?
So the problem, the experimental problem that we are trying to address with this development is lowering. Let me go back. So is lowering this energy recoil energy threshold, right? So we want to have a detector that we put in a low background environment and can have a threshold to see energy depositions of very low energy. And that's why we are going to this new technology, because of the threshold that we can achieve, as I will show you in a second. Does that make sense?
Okay, I think you mean the problem in a current technology.
Right, the current searches for dark matter, right?
Right.
Are limited in what they can do at low mass dark matter because of the threshold of the detectors. So what we are trying to do is push on this area of low mass dark matter search by lowering the threshold of the detector. Is that, does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for the question. Okay, so right. So we started, we got from Berkeley these thick detectors, and we started doing dark matter search with them because of that low threshold, right? These detectors have 6 grams of mass, which was enough to start doing some dark matter searches, and two electrons of noise, which is equivalent to 7.2 electron volts in energy. So that's why they are good for this low mass dark matter search. Okay, if you put one of these detectors in your lab for a few hours, this is the kind of images that you see, where you have a lot of tracks from muons, then these worm-like tracks that are electrons wandering around, and then you have the low energy hits that look like these dots, right? So what we do when we search for dark matter is we count these very low energy hits, and that's what determines our result. We try to put these detectors in an environment where the radiation is low enough so that everything else gets suppressed, and we just look for these diffusion limited hits. The CCDs themselves are very nice instruments for measuring radiation, right? And one way to see this is on this image that shows the calibration with X-rays, right? So you can see, X-rays from iron 55 and all the escape lines from silicon and even an aluminum line. And the only point that I want to make is that you can really, using X-rays of different energies, really calibrate these instruments at a very large dynamic range and have a really good control over your calibration. Okay, so what is that we do for the dark matter with these detectors? This is the setup that we put together in Snow Lab in 2014. And you can see that we have several of those devices that I showed before, 6 grams each. We put them inside a copper box because you have to operate them cold in order to control the dark current on them. I will talk about the dark current in a minute, right? Then we put them inside a copper box that we cool down to avoid all infrared radiation hitting the detector. And then we install this in a lead and copper box to reduce all the other radiation, right? And outside, we build a large neutron shield made out of polyethylene, white in this picture. And that's how we assemble the experiment. So we have, this is still with the standard scientific CCDs, right? And we have been able to do, to get interesting results that I'm going to discuss here in a second, right? So the initial results are shown here. I wanted to give you these 2016 results so that you understand the performance of the detectors. What we do is we take very, very long exposures, right? Data for 30,000 seconds, right? And then we measure the charge on each pixel, and this is the distribution of the charge on each pixel when the noise is about 1.8 electrons, right? And then we look for deviations from the expected noise. And that's our search for dark matter. And that is what determines our limit in dark matter. This was in 2016. Now, one interesting thing that I wanted to point out that will become more relevant later, but I want to introduce it now, is that we can measure the position in XY, where each hit occurs because the detector is pixelated, but we can also measure the Z position, right? So we have like a rough 3D reconstruction of the location of the event. And that is possible thanks to the diffusion of the charge inside the silicon, right? So if you look at this muon track, this is a straight track going through the whole 675 microns of silicon, you can see that there is one side that is very narrow and the other side that is wider. And it really allows us to calibrate the diffusion of the charge inside the silicon. And then when you have a hit, depending the size that you see, you can determine where in the third dimension of your silicon detector it happened. This is very useful because, for example, if you look at this data that shows the energy of the event versus the size of the event, you can see that everything that occurs on the front of the detector has a very small size, and everything that occurs on the back of the detector has a very large size. And then your area, the region of interest for your dark matter search is really in the bulk of the detector, right? So this allows you to suppress all the surface backgrounds in the CCD, which is a nice feature of these devices. Okay, now this is more modern, right? This is our result from 2020 with those same detectors. This is a typical event where you can see the reconstruction of the event, where you see the reconstruction of the size of the event, right? That determines the location. And I invite you to look at this paper that has a very detailed description of our background model for this analysis. But at the end, right, we got a limit for the search for dark matter with this experiment. And we also observe an excess on the bulk of the detector that was not expected in our background model, right? So at this point, this is as far as we can go with the standard CCD technology that has a readout noise of about 2 electrons in the search for dark matter, right? And we need new tools to explore further. So the rest of the talk, I'm gonna describe these new tools and how these new tools are working.
So sorry to interrupt, but is there a way to see this excess in your background model plot that you showed? I think a slide before this one. Is that the excess that we see there?
Yes, it's the excess that you see here, right? Let's see. So this is the background model is developed between the 1 and the 1 to 6K, right? So this one doesn't show it. I think, let me see if I have a plot. I don't think I have a good plot for it. Right? I don't think you want to see it in energy, right?
Right. Well, but in any case, is your figure on the right in the previous slide? Is that telling you that your background model is bad? Is that what the...
No, so
if we look at an 8 KeV, for example.
So these regions where we have fluorescence peaks from the materials in our detector were excluded from the background model, right? The background model is, the idea of this was to show that the background model is a good representation of our data, except on this region, between 100 and 200, right? And in the bulk of the detector, which is, of course, a very interesting region for dark matter search, right?
Right, right. I see. Thanks.
Okay, I see you have a question, right? I cannot read your name from my screen, but I see a hand raised.
I think Karim had a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to ask about what is where from your data are collected, from what is the name of this lab? What is the name of your lab?
So the detector is operating, the results that I'm showing in this slide are collected from a detector operated at SnowLab in Canada, actually not so far, I guess, from where you are, if you are in Ontario, right?
Yes.
Yes, so is a detector installed at SnowLab.
Okay. Thanks.
So Juan, can I ask you a bit about your background model? So this, I guess your background model, it's just that you measure tracks in the CCD and then you know the amount of radiation that it's on the CCD somehow, and that you presumably extrapolate down, but your excesses are 100 electron volts. So yeah. How do you know that you have an excess there that presumably involves an extrapolation down to 100 electron volts?
Yes, you are correct, right? So we do not have a background model for 100 electron volts, right? So we do a background model at higher energies that depends on all intrinsic background of the materials that we have in our experiment. So actually fit the isotopic contamination of all the components in our experiment to have a good fit of the background of the detector at higher energies, a few kVs, and then we extrapolate that to lower energies. And it has exactly the problem that you mentioned, right? We do not have an independent background measurement at 100 eV. That's why we have not declared the discovery of dark matter.
Okay. But in a sense, this is normal, right? Like what you're showing us in this slide is a sideband of high energies.
Right.
And there is no way to get a sideband of low energies without dark matter is there or not, so you have to rely on some background prediction, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay,
but one way to improve this situation is to have a detector that can look at much lower energies, right? Because if any of this excess is related to being close to the threshold and the reconstruction of the size of the particles, right, of the heats, right? This depends a lot on the noise. So if you can reduce the noise on your detector, you produce a much better measurement here. So that's what we are doing, right? In part with this detector, which we call Skipper CCD. I see you. You have your hand up. Yes. You have another question. You have a question?
I want to ask you about how to turn on if I have a detector, how to turn on a detector, and how I use it. If I engineer, for example, how I use a detector, how I turn on.
Yeah. So for the operation of a CCD, you actually have to control a series of clock voltages, right? That I will, maybe I will show you a little bit on this slide, right? But you have to provide a series of control signals with voltages that go between plus minus 15 volts, right? And then move the charge from one pixel to the other, in the detector, right? So maybe this is a good slide to talk about that. So the CCD is a series of pixels that are defined by this structure, which is metallization on the silicon, right? That produces the channel stops. And that defines these potential wells in this array of potential wells where the charge is collected, right? So that you set all those voltages and the charge is collected in these potential wells.
Okay.
Ionization charge. After that, you need to move the charge to this position that is the sense node. So the big advantage of a CCD over other detectors is that it's a charge coupled, right? So the sense node is only coupled through the charge with the rest of the detector. So in a typical detector, the noise is determined by the size of the sensor, right? And the capacitance of the sensor. In a CCD, the noise is determined only by the size of the sense node. And by doing this trick of moving the charge from a large area to a small area, you end up with a very small noise, right? That is a standard on CCDs. That's why they are used for astronomy to have good noise performance, because you typically can control the noise very well independently of the size of your active area. So you move the voltages to the clock voltages to change the shape of those potential wells to move the charge from one pixel to the other. First, you do that in this parallel register, and then you drop the charge into the serial register, and you do the same trick to move the charge in the serial register all the way to the sense node, and that's where you look at it, right? So that is the standard way of operating a CCD, and that is what produces the results that I mentioned before, and that's what gets you about 2 electrons of noise. Now, in the last 3 years or so, we have been using a new type of detector developed in collaboration with Berkeley, with LBNL. The designer of the sensor is Steve Holland. And this sensor is the same as a standard CCD, but allows you to measure the charge on the sense node as many times as you want without destroying it, right? So you do the same trick as in the standard CCD. You put the charge on the sense node, you measure it, then you bring it back into the serial register, you reset the sense node, you drop the charge into the sense node, and you measure it again, right? This is shown here, but you measure the sense node, then you drop this voltage and you bring the charge here. And you do this many times, as many times as you want, and you reduce the noise of your charge measurement by multiple sampling. So this is not a new thing, right? It was discussed in the 90s. People were starting to use this skipper CCD idea to measure charges close to 1 electron, right? But it never performed well enough to do something meaningful. So we have been working on it for a while, right? Guillermo, one of our scientists at Fermilab, did his thesis on this in 2012, where he actually got to very low readout noise. And again, with the help from Steve Holland from LBNL, in 2017, we were able to really achieve the electron counting regime on this detector. So in this animation that I hope you will work for the video connection, I will show you what happens. This is real data, real skipper CCD data, right? Taking with a single sample of the charge of each exposure. So I will, of each pixel, right? A single measurement of the charge of each pixel. And I will show you what happens with this when you take multiple measurements. As you see, when you increase the number of measurements, right, the noise goes down as the square root of the number of measurements. And when you are close to 1,000, you get to the regime where you can really separate the pixels that have zero electrons with the ones that have a single electron, right? And this pixel in the center of this animation is a pixel that has a single electron, and it really becomes very high signal to noise detection for this detector, right? So this is the magic of the Skipper CCD that is going to allow us to push for the dark matter search much farther than the limits that I showed you before. Okay, so I hope that animation worked, right? But if it didn't work, this is, you know, it's the same data, right? This is for a single sample. And this is when, after you do 3,000 samples, and you can see the high signal detection, right?
It worked, and it seems also that the 300 events samples is actually enough.
Yes, right? Yes, true, right? So there is an optimization that needs to be done, yes. And this is how the noise drops, right, as a function of redox. So this, you know, if you look at our paper in 2017, right, you will see that we actually went from the classic scientific CCDs with a good noise of 1.8 electron, right? Or we use in DAMIC, for example, to the Skipper CCD that can count electrons 0, 1, 2, and so on. In this case, with 4,000 samples, it's not always necessary to go that far. And really, when you are doing the experiment, you don't need to have that huge separation between the different peaks, right? So this is a development that took 30 years. People were not working on this full time, but it's not a new idea, but the optimization is of this in order to use it for real experiments took a lot of time. The Skipper CCDs are cool because they cannot only count 0 or 1 electrons. They can have a very large dynamic range, right? In this case, we are looking at the hits from an iron 55 X-ray, right? Which are 5.9 kV, about 1600 electrons. And you can still count the single electrons all the way there, right? Okay, so once we have this device, the first thing we want to do is go look for a dark, really low mass dark matter where we are doing the search in the electron recoil regime, right? As I mentioned before, in this case, you will look for dark matter hitting an electron and then counting 1, 2, and 3 electron events in your detector. This is not possible with other devices, right? So this is, for example, the spectrum that you will get for a 10 MeV dark matter particle. Okay, so we took, the first step for us was to take a couple of grams of CCDs 100 meters underground. So this is now at Minos, in the Minos underground lab at Fermilab, not yet at SnowLab. And a very tiny detector, right? A single detector like this running for a few months. Produce a spectrum that is shown here, where you count the number of pixels with 0 electrons, 1 and 2 electrons. And based on that, and the expected spectrum for dark matter with electron recoil, we establish a limit for dark matter. I will show you in a second. There are a couple of important things that limit the performance of this experiment. The most important one is the dark current rate, right? So for this experiment, we have been able to achieve a rate of dark current that is the world record for silicon detectors, which is 1.6, 10 to the minus 4 electrons per pixel per day, right? So if you have one of those pixels, you have to wait 10,000 days to have a single electron event. That's a very impressive dark current for CCDs. For example, in astronomical instruments, when we build an astronomical camera, typically a few electrons per pixel per hour is a very good dark current, right? So, but this, you know, is what determines the bump here, right? The bump of the number of pixels that have one electron, and that's what determines the sensitivity of our experiment, right?
So what's the main factor between the astrophysical instruments and your CCDs?
So the main advantage that we have is that we can completely surround the detector by cold surfaces at the same temperature as the detector. So all the infrared radiation gets suppressed. And we can operate the detector with voltages that do not generate a current when you move the charge from one pixel to the other. And that is possible because we are looking for very small signals, right? It's harder to do when you have to operate a detector that should be able to also look at bright stuff in the sky. So we are operating in a regime where everything is cold, everything surrounding the detector is cold, and the voltages are really optimized for very low signal levels. Now, the truth is that in astronomy, you don't care if you have one electron per pixel per hour, right? Because the sky will actually be a lot more than that. So people have not worried too much about this before, and they get to a level that is much lower than the sky background, and that's okay. But for us, we really need to push this number a lot. Okay, this result is, you know, we are very proud of it because it had a lot of press, right? But it's really a small detector operating in a shallow underground site, proving that the new technology really push what you can do for low mass dark matter in a tremendous way, right? And these are the results from the 2020 paper on SENSEI are the limits in blue here. So you can see that we are leading in the low mass dark matter below 10 MeV, right? And and we are competing with experiments that are much larger, right? Like xenon 10, but really the trick is the threshold. And now we are taking this technology and building a 100-gram experiment and taking a get close to where you are in Ontario to Snow Lab to install the new experiment. Let me show you. Oh, I wanted to discuss a couple more things before showing you the new experiment. So one thing that we learned, right, about this is that the dark current or the dark counts on the detector, that 10 to the minus 4 electrons per pixel per day, is not all intrinsic in the detector, right? Some of it is produced or depends on the higher energy background in the sensor. So in this case, right, we took data with a so this box here shows the different high energy backgrounds, right? In the x-axis, right? When you go from 10,000 DRUs to less than 4,000, and the y-axis shows the rate of dark count events, single electron events. So you can see that it shows some dependence on that. So a lot of these things that we call dark current really depends on the environmental radiation and a really lower energy events produced by higher energy things going on in the detector. So that's a very important thing to know, because it determines, you know, how to reduce this number even further for the future, right? So we did this by changing the shield in our detector. And the other thing that we learned from this is that the rate of events, if you measure the distance from a high energy event to your single electron event, you will see that the rate of the events depend on how close you are to a higher energy thing. So really, we are learning that a lot of these single electron events are consequence of high energy things going on in your detector, which points to, you know, good ways to reducing that rate of single electron events even further. Yeah, I'll skip this. So this is what we are putting together now. Well, we actually have it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Going back to the thing that you just showed, do you have any idea what rejection efficiency you will be able to get? Or someone you're studying it already?
We are studying it, right? You can see that we can have very significant reduction if you select the region of the image that is far away from the high energy events, but we do not know how far we can take this, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the lower single count, single electron events that we can get if we really suppress all the higher energy stuff? That's the main area of research for us now.
Okay, thank you.
And it's critical for the future, right? It's a critical thing for the future. Okay, so this is what we have at Snow Lab now. This is when we were putting it together. I tried this morning to find a picture of the detector in Snow Lab, but it's all covered with the shield. You don't see anything. So I am showing you the pictures before we took it over there. So this is a much larger array, right? The same skipper CCDs, but going from 2 grams to 100 grams. And we did something different in this case. Because of the pandemic, we sent all the equipment to Snow Lab, and we work with the team there without us being able to travel, for them to assemble it while we were at Fermilab. And that worked very well, right? We had to work hard on the documentation, which is a good thing. And we have now the experiment running at Snow Lab and starting to take data and starting to do the measurements of rates that are really important for our dark matter search. Okay, so what does the program look like for the next, I'm running out of time. What does the program really look like in the next years? So I mentioned the Sensei 100 gram experiment at Snow Lab. We expect to start taking data with the full set of detectors around mid-2022. And have a threshold of about 1 electron, right? But there are a lot of other things here. Also at Snow Lab, we started operating this month an upgraded version of the DAMIC experiment that produced the result with the excess that I was showing you before, but now with the skipper CCDs to understand really that excess. And that will have 5 DRU because that's the background that we already have in that vessel, and started taking data now. At the same time, last month, the DAMIC-M collaboration, which I am not directly involved, but we work very close with, installed about 10 grams of active mass in the Modan underground laboratory with a goal of reaching one electron threshold and 1 DRU of background. I painted this blue because this has not been demonstrated yet, right? but that is starting to take data now. At the same time, I mentioned the Sensei experiment with 100 grams in the middle of 2022, and 5 DRU of background is the goal. Later, right, for next year, the DAMIC M collaboration is going to install up to 1 kilogram of skipper CCDs with an order of magnitude lower background and also 1 electron threshold. And then we, you know, all these collaborations are working together on a project to build a 10 kilogram skipper CCD experiment with yet another order of magnitude lower background to start operating in 2027, right? This is how the projections look like compared to the existing Sensei at Minos data that I showed before, right? This is what we expect Sensei at SnowLab to be able to do. This is what we expect the DAMIC M1 kilogram experiment be able to do, and this is the Oscura experiment. So I had some slides about Oscura, but I really running out of time. So I will just mention that I will send you these slides for you to look at them. But we are working hard on the Oscura R&D program. Perhaps the main thing to mention is that we had developed the new Oscura detectors. We have them at hand now and have been operating them at Fermilab, and they work very nicely. So we now have the technology to build this Oscura experiment, the 10 kilogram experiment. And there are a lot of engineering challenges that we have to address, and we are working hard on it, right? The readout and so on. But I will skip most of it, right? I will just say that the R&D program for the next generation experiments is very active, right?
Can I just stop you for a second? So what's different in a, so when you scale up, are you just putting many, many skippers on parallel?
No, there are many things are different, right? One of the things that, the first challenge is that the company that was fabricating the CCDs for us decided not to continue that production line anymore, right? So we had to find a new way of fabricating these sensors. And a new way is not only a new company, but really a new process, right? So we had to design the detectors for a new fabrication process, more modern, that will stay for more years to come, and that we could do it. So we had to transfer the technology to a more modern fabrication process, and we did that. So that's one thing that makes it also very cheap, right? Because the more modern technology fabricates at the lower cost. The other thing that is very different is the readout. Let me see if I have this picture here. So instead of having a lot of skipper CCDs with a cable for the readout, we want to put the readout ASIC right next to the detector. So we had to develop an ASIC for reading out these sensors. We now have them fabricated and are testing them, and they perform this. This is called the Midna ASIC. So the readout sensor, the readout ASIC is mounted right next to the detector and works cold. That's a big difference. And then there is a lot of multiplexing done on the signals in the cold so that you don't have all those cables coming out of your vessel. And the final big change is that instead of having the detectors operating in a vacuum and cool down through cold fingers, we are submerging the whole thing in a liquid nitrogen bath and controlling the temperature of the detector by increasing the pressure of that liquid nitrogen. The pressure on the gas above the liquid nitrogen. So it's boiling above 77 Kelvin, and that's a way to cool down the whole experiment in a much easier fashion than than what we have been doing until now, right? The Oscura experiment works with 24,000 Skipper CCDs. And until now, we have been able to do 50 detectors or so. So it's a big engineering effort, and we are in that development right now. But, you know, so far, things have been working. We have the sensors, we have the new electronics, and we have been testing sensors in this liquid nitrogen bath, and everything is, for the moment, we see no showstoppers to build this, right? This is how the large experiment looks like. It's, you know, it's a large, you know, few meters tall detector that we plan to install at Snow Lab also with these 24,000 Skipper CCDs. Okay, so we have many other applications. I somehow thought that I was going to have that I was not going to run out of time, but there are a lot of other ways where we use this Skipper, and I will send you these slides so that you can look at them. But we use them for quantum imaging, for high resolution spectroscopy in astronomy, for coherent electron neutrino nucleus scattering sense at nuclear reactors. We are also thinking about the use of Skipper CCDs for photon counting in the UV, optical, and near infrared for future large space telescopes, according to aligned with what was highlighted as high priority for the recent decadal survey, and also for low energy radiation detection in security applications, right? So non-destructive readout of this with the Skipper CCD open a new window into electron counting experiments in silicon. The results for dark matter are already world leading, and a lot more of these are expected to come in the next few years. The application of the Skipper CCD outside the direct dark matter search are broad, and we have an intense R&D program going on for developing the next generation of these applications. Okay, so that's all. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you, Juan. Here's some virtual applause. If there are any questions from the audience.
Yeah, I have a few questions if nobody else. So first for astronomy applications, as you said yourself, in astronomy, you don't necessarily require single electron counting. So what do you guys have in mind more precisely?
Yeah, so it's not for imaging, right? It's for a high resolution spectroscopy where you do have a you are limited by the noise of your detector.
Oh, I see.
So sometimes you don't really need to count electrons, but you will benefit from having very low noise. In space, for the next generation, exoplanet, direct imaging and spectroscopy images, you really need photon counting.
As a follow-up, like what type of energy resolution and dark count rate will you be able to achieve for these detectors?
So for the Oscura application, right, we are pushing for a dark count rate on the order of 10 to the a goal of 10 to the minus 6. We think that the silicon should be able to get to that level, and we are trying to demonstrate that the difference between where we are now at 10 to the minus 4 and that is really associated with the external radiation. But that's something we still have to completely prove. The early evidence is what I was showing you before, but that's where we are pushing for. With respect to the energy resolution, it depends a little bit what you mean, right? What we really can do is count electrons. So if you are looking for X-rays, the energy resolution is not going to be improved above the beyond the Fanon noise, because that's what determines the energy resolution. Now, if you are really counting for electrons, then you can say that our energy resolution is the ionization energy of a single electron, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because you are saying like you are going to do like exoplanets, like
But then the energy, the spectroscopic resolution will come from the rest of the optics, right? Not from the counting. So out of 40,000 or things like that is what people are thinking there, right?
I see.
But it doesn't come from the sensor. It comes from the dispersive elements in the optics.
Right. Makes sense. Thank you.
So I have to ask, how about the neutrino measurements? I know you guys were close to seeing something at the CONI, I think, but
yeah. So right. So we don't have a result yet. We install we install Skipper CCDs in this reactor, right? In this nuclear reactor at in Angra. And then we install a couple of Skipper CCDs there. I will see what happens with that. It's probably not enough mass to have a good detection of sevens. It probably will explore some exotic models beyond what has been done until now. And then we install very recently, right? A Skipper CCD in a nuclear reactor in Argentina, much closer to the core of the reactor. And those results are even more preliminary, but there we do have enough rate to achieve detection with a very small mass, right? We just have to be able to control the background from the reactor itself.
Because the reactor more powerful?
No, we are only 8 meters away from the core and we are inside the containment building.
So Brazil wouldn't let you get inside the building, I guess.
Not yet. Not yet. Maybe now with the competition, they will agree.
Right.
Good. Yeah. In Brazil, we are outside this dome, right?
Right. Any other questions?
So I guess a last question that I had for Oscura, you said you're going to submerge this thing in liquid nitrogen, right? The detectors themselves.
Yes.
So is that already tested? So have you actually taken a skipper and submerged it in liquid nitrogen and measured stuff?
Yeah, so this is what I skip over, right? But our plan is to submerge everything in liquid nitrogen and increase the pressure of the vapor to 450 psi so that the liquid nitrogen can be warmer, right? Because we don't like to run the detectors at 77 Kelvin. We want to run them something like 120 Kelvin. So we need to increase the pressure. So we need to make like a little liquid nitrogen bomb, right? And we tried that. We did it here, and yeah, and we have a skipper there, and it works. And we are trying to understand the background, because now we have to look at the scintillation of the liquid nitrogen and have to suppress, have to coat the detectors with a layer, a metallization layer, to avoid seeing that light, right? Turns out that there are not a lot of measurements of the scintillation of liquid nitrogen, so we have to do those also.
Yeah, that was precisely where I was going. Like, presumably anything that passes through the liquid will emit light.
Yes. So we expect that we'll have to coat the detectors with a blinding layer of aluminum.
Okay.
And but we are doing those measurements now, right? We are doing them with the CCDs, but our colleagues at PNNL that also work in Oscura are doing measurements of scintillation of liquid nitrogen with phototubes, right? It's not a very good scintillator, but it's bad enough for us, right?
Right, right. Okay.
Could you go back to that table that you had with the different generation of experiments? Yeah, that one. Let's see. So I was trying to think of the time scale. So you expect to run, is that, commissioning. So you're still, from mid of next year, you still have a couple of years to take data, I guess, right? With some,
yes. And this one probably will not be installed all at once, right?
Right.
So, yeah. But it's important because we want to go from where we are now, which is 5 DRUs, to 0.01 DRU, right? So we need all that sequence in order to understand how to get there.
Right, of course. And is there any kind of floor to this? Like something that you know already? Like anything could happen in between now and Oscuro, but is there something that you know already would not let you get past, I don't know, 10⁻³.
Well, I tell you, Oscura is very hard, right? I mean, to get to 0.01 DRU, the silicon in which you fabricate the detectors can only be exposed to the radiation from the cosmic radiation for 5 days, right? So that means that you have to to really, this is gonna be hard, right? And we are making a scheme so that we can build shields in the manufacturing facility and so on. But I think it's gonna be hard to go beyond that. I don't want to think about how to go beyond that right now. I think the cosmic activation is what worries me the most.
I see. So you need to go from fabrication to deployment very fast.
You need to build all the, you need, so we need to do most of the work underground, right? All the assembly work underground. And we need to do the work on buildings or on facilities that are shielded, right? Build shield so that you put the detectors in a machine for an hour or so and then back into the shield. It's logistics and it's money, but this, at some point it becomes, okay, let's look for another technology, right?
Interesting. I think Karim has his hand raised.
Yes, go ahead.
I want to ask about how long dark matter particles, WMBs, it takes to create it.
How long it takes to create a WMB?
Yes, of course.
So, I mean, in our what we are saying is that the WIMPs are created, right? And that we are looking for them for the interaction in our detectors. The density of WIMPs is established during the evolution of the universe as the balance between the different components and the universe cools down and establish a relic density of WIMPs. And that process takes a long time, but I think that maybe others here are better than myself telling how long, when exactly the WIMP density freezes, right?
Yeah. I mean, for the purposes of this talk, forever ago, right?
Right.
Okay, if there are no questions, I'll stop recording. We can thank Juan again.
Okay, thank you. It was fun.